Some of our beers do have a tendency to explode.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
These ones won't.
Says Jez.
Yeah.
So you have his word for it.
Sessionable.
All right, welcome to Sessionable. We're actually one down this episode. Liam is unfortunately, he's got a severe case of the man flu, so he's not going to be joining us. But we're also two up, so we're joined by two special guests, Jez and Sam Fletcher. So, hey guys.
Hey, nice Hi. To be here.
Yeah.
You go. Jez and Sam are from Jabberwock Brewery.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard of that brewery. I don't blame you. They're a homebrew operation.
Yeah. So we thought we'd do an episode on homebrewing. So I'm going to put, at the start of the episode, a bit of a warning. This might get a bit nerdy. I'm not talking, like, Doctor Who, Star Trek nerdy. I'm talking...
We might get there, too.
We might, yeah. I'm happy to. Don't worry. Yeah. And if you want that kind of nerdy, that'll definitely be coming in some later episodes. But it might get a bit beer nerdy. We might get a bit technical down to the nitty-gritty. Because this is an episode we're going to do about homebrewing beer. So we might start with you guys maybe telling us a bit about yourselves. You're all around the Sydney craft beer scene. We all are, I guess. But why don't you tell us a bit about yourselves and a bit about your homebrew operation, what you guys do.
Sure. So we started homebrewing in 2004. We started with a stovetop kit. You just put extract, like unhopped malt extract, add the hops you want, and then you just basically boil it up, ferment it, and you got homebrew. We started getting a little bit limited by what we could do in that way, so we switched to all grain brewing, I guess around 4 years ago now, and we've since then, I've got into it a little bit more. I took a course through Ballarat Uni to do professional brewing and so forth, but it was basically to help my homebrewing rather than I was going to start up a professional brewery.
Would you ever look at starting up a professional brewery, or is that kind of just no?
So the one thing that the course at Ballarat taught me was that I don't want to start up a professional brewery because it's, you know, you just lose the creativity to a certain extent, and everything has to be to a certain extent about the money because you're running a business, right?
Of course.
And if I wanted to run a business, I could probably think of much better ways of making money than brewing beer.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
I'm not ruling it out at all, but yeah.
It's a retirement plan, right? Once you no longer need to make a living from it.
So I should expect Jabberwock to open up in 50 years.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think the market might be a bit mature by then, hopefully.
Literally.
Many bubbles will have come and burst.
Yeah. So we're drinking today in the episode. We'll be drinking a bunch of your beers. I think is the plan, and maybe one of your beers, Adrian.
Yeah, I brought beer as well. Yeah.
I didn't bring one. I admit I'm haven't been homebrewing that much. I did my first all grain batch yesterday, as of when we're recording. So that's and when I say all grain, it was beer in a bag.
That's still ahead of me.
Yeah. So that got put in the fermenter last night. And.
And how's it bubbling along?
I didn't check it this morning.
Okay.
I had to go to work this morning. I'll check it tonight. I'm a bit worried. I think I might have to tip this one out. It was
don't worry.
Never tip out a homebrew until you've bottled it, or at least bottled some of it.
All right.
And always keep at least one bottle for
just in case.
Forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still have one bottle of my first one. Okay. I'm sure it's tasting.
Oh, I still have a bottle of my first one, which was Cooper's Pale Kit, which. Mm. Just tastes horrible. I can't drink it.
Mm-hmm. We finally, I think it was last year, drank the last bottle of our very first brew. It was
Jez served it to us blind, and it was rated very poorly indeed.
Well, I think that's a great place to start. What was your first brew? What was the
so the first beer we brewed was effectively something like a Little Creatures Pale Ale clone. It was brewed with pale malt extract and some hops. We didn't dry hop it. We didn't do anything. We just put hops in at the start, hops in at the end, because that's what John Palmer's How to Brew book told us to do.
What a great book.
And
we'll put the link to that in the show notes. Yeah, good. Howtobrew.com, right?
Something like that.
I think you can get the whole book's on
free online.
The
first edition is free, available online.
Howtobrew.com.
I paid like $30 for my copy.
You probably got the up-to-date one where he doesn't just tell you how to brew Little Creatures Pale Ale clone.
Uh-huh.
But but it was fun. It was a great day. We were five of us then, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
Because there was...
Oh, no, I think it was just four.
Four?
Pete.
Pete? Rich? PK. Rich was
no,
there?
No, PK didn't come.
Oh, he didn't come to the first one. Okay, so yeah. So, since then, we still brew with Rich, who's still around, and one of our original Jabberwock crew has moved to Ireland and then Switzerland, so he's not around anymore. That was our first beer, was Little Creatures Pale Ale Clone. We put loads of Cascade in at the end, and when I say loads, it was a minuscule amount that we thought was loads. And we drank it. We were freaking out. I mean, your first homebrew, freak out about every little thing. We were like...
I still do.
I was emailing, people on the day going, oh my God, we're about to ruin the brew because we were like trying to proof the yeast or something like that, actually make a sort of yeast starter on the day because that's what John Palmer said to do, and it wasn't bubbling and it's meant to bubble, and we're like, what's going on? And so we threw it away. We threw the yeast away and we're like, now we need some yeast. Where can we get some yeast? So we went to the supermarket and bought a can of Cooper's homebrew kit and just grabbed the yeast out of the top of that to ferment our first beer because we were just like, oh no, the yeast is dead.
Yeah.
And of course it wasn't. It was just fine. Yeah. But, that's
but that, but that gave us a nice can of Cooper's homebrew kit to do as our second brew.
Yeah, that's right. That was our second brew, was just the Cooper's homebrew kit.
Which was rubbish.
Yeah. It was, that was not a good beer, that second beer. But yeah.
So your homebrew outfit is called Jabberwock.
Right,
so maybe talk us through, what's the kind of the, I mean, obviously it's the Lewis Carroll...
Actually, it came from a different source. Maybe Sam can tell this story, because he's like our naming guy.
Can I?
Are you the naming guy? Because the names that I say, the names are excellent.
Why are we called Jabberwock? I don't remember.
Well, we were originally talking about, we're trying to have some, I don't know, some kind of fantastical, kind of mythical name or something like that. And we were going through there's a very old computer game. Here's the nerdy part. Very old computer game called Rogue that was all ASCII art-based, sort of dungeon crawler kind of thing. And we were going through... And all of the creatures that you fought in Rogue had, were represented by different letters. So there's one for every letter of the alphabet. And we were like, oh, maybe we could use one of those. So we went through, what was it? Aquator, Bat, Centaur, Dragon. We got all the way to J, and we got up to Jabberwock, and we're like, that's great, I love it. So that was how it came about. So we're named after creature from a video game from the, it's probably late 70s, early 80s.
Great game, though.
Great game.
I remember Rogue. Good stuff.
So what are we drinking at the moment? This is one of yours, isn't it?
Yep. So this is our Turkish Delight Ale. It's 8.5%. alcohol. It's brewed with chocolate, creme de cacao, and rose water, which is where you get the Turkish Delight.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the most complicated beers we had to brew. We brewed it basically as something like a dark brown ale or a light porter, and then we added chocolate to the boil.
Yep.
We added more chocolate in secondary, and we added... I made up a mixture of creme de cacao and rose water, just separate to the thing, until I got it into the sort of right proportions that it was smelling like Turkish Delight, smelling, tasting like Turkish Delight, and we just put that into the fermenter in secondary until it picked up all the
all those,
flavors we wanted.
Oh, wow.
We also did some other weird things to it. It's hard to tell now because it's kind of dropped out a bit, but it's actually got red food dye in it.
Okay, yeah.
At the start, when you poured it, it actually had a quite bright pink head with the sort of brown body. It really looked like kind of Fry's Turkish Delight, yeah, which we really liked. And we had to counter the rose water to a certain extent because rose water can kill the head retention, yep, and everything like that. So there's an additive that we used in this called propylene glycol alginate, which is sold in the homebrew shop as big head liquid or big head powder. And it's designed to, you know, keep the head retention, yep, going. Stuff.
So you guys have brewed a lot of different kind of crazy kind of stuff. So, you know, obviously this is one of them. And I think our producer Lee sent us an untapped list of all the different styles you've brewed. And I'm not going to read them out because it's stupidly long.
I've lost track of how many beers. I used to know, like, oh, there, this is going to be
according to,
our
20th according batch. To 61 beers, I think, is what it,
yeah,
says on Untappd.
That's, that sounds about, wow, right. There'd be beers, yeah, that, yeah, I haven't checked into Untappd, but yeah, that's probably about right.
So do you guys ever rebrew a beer, or is it you always do something new?
We occasionally rebrew beers, yeah, but Jez is such a mad scientist that it's hard to keep him. It's hard to say, I really liked that beer that we did that was successful, let's do it again, because he's always wanting to try something new and crazy and wacky, so...
I guess that's the beauty of not having to be commercial, right? You can always do, yeah, something different.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the other thing I really like about homebrewing, is that it allows you to do beers that just wouldn't be commercially viable, yeah, or that can be a massive, massive risk, right? That's not to say that commercial breweries don't, you know, on their pilot setup, you know, do crazy, you know, wacky things, and then if they turn out right, go, yeah, okay, let's ramp this up and make a big batch out of that. But
yeah. Speaking of which, you guys recently brewed a beer that almost won a competition, but wasn't commercially viable enough to win a competition.
We actually have that one to drink.
Excellent.
In a little bit.
Oh yes.
we could maybe go into that one next if you want to. It's it's a bacon and pepper ale that we took along to just the local tap house's brew share competition. They have it for a year. And the idea was that the winner of this, it was meant to be a beer mimics food competition, the winner of this got to go brew their beer at Young Henry's. Mm. And we took along this beer. We're like, okay, we're not going to win because one of the criteria was commercial viability and everything like that. And we got through to the final stage. And by this stage, I was like, oh man, maybe we could get our beer brewed at Young Henry's. That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I was playing down how much bacon it took. So in a 25-liter batch, there was 0.5 kilo of bacon used to produce this beer. And so Richard from Young Henry's was doing the calculations in his head of, you know, how much bacon that would be. And he came up with something like it was going to be 50 kilos or 100 kilos of bacon to brew this beer. He's like, that's just not going to work. And that's sort of, to a certain extent, glossing over the fact that he didn't particularly like the beer.
That was
Alex Mesker's Tropic Thunder. And that was a fantastic beer. Yeah. So I don't want to oversell our beer. His beer was absolutely a wonderful, wonderful beer. Mm.
So this current one, is this like a bus for us? Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Untapped.
Great name.
Great idea. Yeah.
Can you explain the name for us?
So are you the naming guru? Is that your...
most of our names are devised via long email conversations where Jez will come up with a list of, you know, stupid puns, and then I'll come up with a list of less stupid and wittier puns. and Like a Bosphorus was one that I came up with because I was thinking of Like a Boss and Bosphorus, which is a place in Turkey, hence Turkish Delight.
Yeah.
Just to explain the joke. Genius. For those who don't get it, because I tried to explain this to a group of colleagues as like the best example of a name I'd come up with recently, and nobody got it. Like, I think I even had to explain the song Like a Boss to them, because the phrase, like a boss, because they hadn't even heard of that. Yeah. So...
I think my favourite one of yours recently was Witty Thai Pun.
Witty Thai Pun. I think that was yours, actually, Jez.
Was it? No, that was definitely yours, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you were trying to think of, like, terrible Thai. This was our Thai spice infused wit beer. You were trying to think of terrible Thai puns, like you get in Thai.
Something like Thai Titanic or Thai Rack.
Or Thai Rific. Yeah. That sort of thing. And then he got a bit meta. And he's like, you know, it's hard to come up with these witty puns or something. And he's like, witty. We're doing a wit beer. There you go. So that's where we got up with witty Thai puns.
Genius. So yeah, when you guys started homebrewing, where did you get your materials? I mean, has it always been the same supplier or?
Yeah, well, we kind of been cheating on Dave from Dave's Homebrew a little bit recently. Well, no, actually, we've gone back to Dave because we started getting our stuff delivered by Craft Brewer, who's the homebrew supplies arm of Bacchus Brewing. Used to be Bacchus Brewing was just the side project from Crop Brewer.
And now it's kind of the other way around.
Now it's the other way around. Just because it was so much easier, I didn't have a car, it was hard to get to North Sydney and get, like, especially when I was lugging sacks of grain home and everything like that. So I got a car recently, so now I'm back to Dave's.
Oh, okay.
It's a great spot. So Dave's Homebrew, North Sydney, best homebrew shop in Sydney. As far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I get the bus past his shop every day when I go to work. I haven't homebrewed since starting working, but I imagine if I started homebrewing again, I would go to Dave's.
Well, I was just for the convenience factor. I was at Dave's yesterday buying grain. Oh, I got it. Yeah, I went in the morning. Me and my mate who I brew with, and we were like, Dave. So we got a kit from you. You know, it came with the plastic fermenter and plastic bottles and a Cooper's extract tin and some hops and some, you know, we did that. Kind of want to go from that and we just want to go straight into grain. And he's like, he literally said, have I told you to fuck off yet? And I was like, no. He's like, all right, well, fuck off. He gave me howtobrew.com and also Aussie Homebrewer, the beer in a bag how-to thing on there, which we'll link to as well. He's like, so go figure out what you want to do. Give me a call. Tell me what kind of recipe you want. I'll crack the grain for you, and then tell you when you can come in and grab it. So we bought a big pot. Called him. It was about an hour later. I was like, okay, we want to make this. And he was like, all right, I got a recipe for you. Yeah, come in an hour, and I'll have the grain cracked. And we went in, and we had it. Big bag. You know, we bought everything we needed. Went home, made the beer. He's definitely an interesting guy, but he's very very helpful.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, and I think telling us to fuck off was the best thing he could have told us at that point. I think Dave, especially around here, is probably one of the best.
Yeah. There's another one that I'd give a plug to as well. I haven't actually been there before, but I hear nothing but good things. Called the Hop and Grain. In Enmore. They've only opened up in the last sort of 6 months or so, and they started out just doing sort of kit brew stuff, but they're getting in grain, they're getting in more hops,
I'll check them out, definitely.
And they're starting to run, like, homebrew get-together clubs and things like that as well, which is which is really cool. But I haven't managed to get down there to check them out yet.
Excellent. Apart from the homebrewing, you guys are both very much in the Sydney craft beer scene. I see both of you guys at the pub regularly. I've served you both at various places I've worked. What came first? Was it the homebrewing and then the drinking other people's beer, or was it the other way around? Was it you were into beer and then you started homebrewing?
Yeah, we were certainly into beer before we started homebrewing. In fact, we used to run a monthly beer tasting on the first Saturday of the month, and we called it the first one SBT. I can't remember. First Saturday beer tastings.
Yes. We weren't very inventive with that right back then.
It's like the first Tuesday book club.
Is that the... Yeah.
So
I think it was based on our dad used to have first Tuesday wine tastings. Okay. So, yeah.
So we did that every month, and we basically raided our local liquor store for all of the beers we could find, and then we wanted more interesting beers, and so it just sort of progressed and everything. And eventually we discovered, we got to the stage where we're like, we know everything there is to know about beer, right? We've tasted sure all these beers, we've like, you know, reviewed them all, we know what beer is about. And then we were talking to a friend of our dad's who homebrews himself, or used to homebrew, and he was like, "Do you guys homebrew?" And I'm like, "Nah, we're not interested in that. You know, we're not on the production side. We're on the consumption side of beer." He's like, "Oh, you should do it. It's really good. You know, you never know, like, you don't know how little you know about beer until you start homebrewing." And we're like, "All right, well, let's give it a shot. We'll just brew this Cooper's clone, this Little Creature's clone, and give it a try and everything." And it's true. Like, you just have no idea what goes into making a beer until you do it yourself. And the next stage of that, I guess, was when I did my course down at Ballarat Uni. I was just like, because I was like, I can homebrew, I can brew, you know, I felt like I could brew lots of different styles, I could do all sorts of things. And I got there, and then you have to learn biochem and molecular biology and all of this sort of stuff, microbiology. And I was just like, wow, and there's still another level. So it's like the more you get into beer, the more you realise you know nothing.
How little you know. yesterday when I was, you know, doing that batch of beer, I was finding it hard because I've helped on a lot of commercial brew days, right? I'll just, you know, go to a brewery and just help them out on a brew day. So I've done that before, but then actually scaling it back and being like, how do you do it in your... And I realised just how little I actually know about how it's done, and you know, I like to think I know about beer, but it makes you think.
At the stage where you're like, you know, well, I know that yeast converts sugars into alcohol and carbon dioxide. I know that. That's what yeast does. You know. And then you're like, wait, here are all the metabolic pathways that it goes through to get to all of the stages, all the byproducts, all of the other things. And it's stuff that you kind of need to know at some point because, you know, if you get a bad batch of beer or you've constantly got an issue with a beer, you need to know, oh, this is probably because it's getting stuck making aldehyde or, you know, whatever it happens
to be. And it's like mashing at the wrong temperature and things like that. You know, the water's wrong.
And there's things you can do to adjust.
There's a whole book. I think John Palmer wrote a book about water.
Yeah.
Water chemistry.
Water is one of my...
It's as thick as How to Brew.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this whole book is about water. It's like, that's just ridiculous.
It's fantastic. Water chemistry and brewing was one of my, like, favourite parts of the course. I absolutely loved learning about that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm very much at the beginner part of brewing in that I've brewed several batches and they've been okay, but there's so many things that I don't or haven't controlled in my brewing yet that I probably should look at. Not including the materials, not including the ingredients that I put in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is probably where we might get a bit technical, but talk us through a bit of like of your setup. So how do you, like, what is a typical brew day for Jabberwock?
So, okay. Well, I live in a small apartment, so we have to sort of construct the brewery every time we brew, effectively. Mm-hmm. So we start out, Sam gets there, we usually start around sort of 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sam will get there and clean the fermenters, because most of brewing, or most of getting a beer right, is making sure your cleaning and your process and everything is good.
That was another thing we were very anal about on our first brew. It was like dumping a shit ton of bleach into you know, everything,
rinsing, scrubbing it five times, everything like that.
We just do everything once now.
Do all the cleaning, everything like that. Then you have to do your mash, so that's, you know, getting it. We have a esky that we do our mash in. We add water to get it to the right temperature. It's just an infusion mash. We don't have it on the stove or anything. You can mash by adding a direct heat source and keeping it at the right temperature. You can do other things like decoction mashing and so forth that we won't go into. But basically, most of the beers we do, we just put it in the esky, keep it at the temperature. It sits there. We'll mix it every now and then. But basically, you just keep the grain at the right temperature so the enzymes do the work. You let that run out. You put in more water at a higher temperature, and you mix it up again. You let it, you let all of that run out, and you basically then just rinsing the grains till you're getting all of the sugars out of them, and you put it in a big pot, and you stick it on the stove. You boil it for anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, something like that. I mean, I think the longest boil we've ever done is about 2 hours. That's for our Imperial Stout that we have. And then we cool it. We have a hose we attach to the washing machine output. Goes through a copper coil, and we stick that in the brew kettle on the stove until it's all cool. And it's just a matter of pouring it into the fermenter. We don't aerate. A lot of people, you need to oxygenate the wort after you've boiled it. We basically do that by making sure we tip it from high enough that it all splashes around. And
that's
like
what
that.
I do, yeah.
And yes. Then pitch the yeast and we're done.
Yeah.
That's it.
Great. I'm pretty sure what we're drinking now is the pepper and bacon one, right? Is that...
No, this is...
No,
so
okay.
This is,
I'm wrong. What a surprise.
This is our native mint porter.
Okay. I was getting a lot of...
I found it quite peppery,
yeah,
that's why.
I was getting a lot of herbal characters to it.
Yeah,
so
to me it smells like... It's like a bush spice. It smells like being in the bush to me. It's kind of a little bit...
The pepper from.
It smells like a kind of...
I'm going to edit that out.
It kind of like smells like... It smells like a gruit to me.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, definitely.
So that was kind of part of the inspiration behind this. We actually did a gruit just done with Australian native spices.
I really like that one.
And the inspiration for this one was to do... basically, we wanted a mint porter, but we thought we'd use native mint because it's a little bit more interesting, a bit more unique.
If I may, I believe this was originally brewed for the local tap house in Victoria, homebrew competition for Kettle from Nurnya Ur.
That's right.
I can't remember if it was a criteria to use it.
You had to do a porter.
To
do a porter. And I'd intended, we'd brewed this beer for it, and I was down in Melbourne for Good Beer Week, which is when it was on, and I got so sick that I had to fly home,
and I missed
the entire pre-show. But we'd kind of brewed it specifically for Kettle, because we were like, he's done things with Norwegian spices,
and sea buckthorn, things like that.
I was like, well, let's do one with Australian spices in it to kind of, game the system a bit, I guess, or whatever it happened to be. We thought Kettle might get a kick out of this, and I'm sad that he never got to try it.
If you're listening, I'm sure it would have won.
A bottle with your name on it.
I'm sure it would have won.
He might, because, he comes to Australia often enough, doesn't he?
Yeah, I haven't seen him recently.
I'm less sorry he never got to try it, because I'm not a big fan of this beer.
Well, I finished mine pretty quickly.
So what's this one called? What's the name?
So this is called the Prostanthera porter, which is the genus of... Prostanthera is the genus. Mm. I came up with this name.
That's why it's not as clever.
Why it doesn't have a pun.
We probably did have an email exchange trying to come up with a funny
name.
We
either couldn't come up with one, or the puns were just too bad.
No such thing. Are we trying to come up with them now? Is that...
No.
Okay.
No, I'm checking it in. Oh, I've had this one before.
I might have brought it along to a brew share or
maybe,
something.
Yeah.
It's a weird beer.
This is
a beer that puts some people offside, including one of the brewers.
Yes. It is very good for cooking with, though, I've found.
Is that... I don't know if that's the highest compliment, is it?
Yeah, I think one of the other beers it reminds me of is the Red Duck Gruits, and that same kind of herbal character. And I was wondering if you guys got the inspiration from that, or if that preceded the Red Duck beers.
So I think I actually don't recall when I first had either the Red Duck Gruet or the Gruetta, or has he done Gruet a Gruet test?
He's done Gruet test, yeah.
Gruet test. So, yeah, I mean, but the idea of putting spices in beer as, instead of hops is, you know, as old as, you know, brewing itself.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's older than hops,
it's
isn't
older
it?
Than hops, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is, I admit, this is probably the one that I was most concerned about sharing on the show.
So, I mean, as we mentioned, you guys are both, you know, very into the beer scene. Sam, you write for Oz Brews News, is that
occasionally?
Yes. Yeah. So you've probably both watched. Especially you were saying you've been brewing since what, 2004? You said
2004, yeah. Wow,
10 years. 10 years. That's impressive. So you've basically watched the Australian craft beer scene, you know, come into being, I'd say, at that point.
Yeah.
What do you think the kind of the way that industry has kind of developed and changed, and do you think that's affected the kind of things you brew and the kind of things other people homebrew, or
over to Sam?
Oh,
gosh.
that
was
me
way
the deep
bigger,
ones.
Bigger
okay,
question
the bigger question is that you can take bits of it if you want. You don't have to answer the whole thing.
Well, watching essentially what has happened, I mean, it's part of it is all about adding more and more hops, right? So, you know, you just add more hops to your, you know, IPA and make it a double IPA, add more hops to your pale ale and call it a session IPA, and add more hops
I've had a
to
rant
your,
about that
yeah,
on
add,
podcast,
add your
yeah.
hops to your porter and make it a black IPA, or your wheat beer and make it a white IPA and things like that. So, certainly there's, you know, we're watching a lot of interesting hop varieties become available, so that's one thing that is certainly
changing. And people are really getting interested in the varieties of hops, you know, like, you know, I have no interest at all in, you know, a new hop variety comes out, must do a, you know, IPA using entirely mosaic,
that, yeah,
or whatever it happens to be, right?
What are your thoughts on the kind of the darling hop variety? So you've got, you know, obviously, especially in Australia, you've got Galaxy. That's the I enjoy a bit of Galaxy every so often. A bit of an understatement, maybe, but it's definitely the darling hop variety of the Australian craft beer scene. And then you've also, you know, you've got Mosaic, I think, is one of those darling hop varieties.
Yeah.
Nelson Sevier and Motueka,
yep.
Like a lot of the New Zealand stuff. And do you guys brew with them often? What do you think of their kind of?
So we love New Zealand hops. In fact, Sam wrote a little bit of copy for one of our bottles once, which said we did a series of beers just using New Zealand hops, which we called the West Island series, because they were brewed in Australia, but they're using New Zealand ingredients. And the bit of copy went something like, you know, using the best, something like the best that Australia's hop basket, New Zealand, has to offer.
Well, all the good stuff that comes out of New Zealand we claim anyway, right?
That's right.
So,
I'm just waiting for the Crowded House hop variety or the... Yeah.
The Farlap hop variety.
The Russell Crowe.
The Russell Crowe, yeah.
Yeah. So, Galaxy, yeah. We don't brew with Galaxy a lot. We've done a couple of beers with Galaxy, including a beer we named after Australia's first Nobel laureate in physics, Brian Schmidt. It was Galactic. It was called the Galactic Pale Ale, and we had an idea to name it after something Australian, because it's Australian hop, and, you know, something related to astronomy, and we came up with the idea of this. He actually got wind of it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Because he's on Twitter. Someone sent him, hey, you know these guys have brewed a beer named after you and so forth? And he was like, you know, that's really cool. He says, I'm honoured to have a beer named after me. You know, fuck the Nobel Prize. You know? And he actually went to give a talk at the university out in Orange where my dad lives. And my dad had a bottle of this still along. So he's like, I'm going to bring you a bottle of this beer. It was about 12 months old at that stage. It was only a pale ale, so it hadn't held up well. But he was like, you know, great, so we've got a photo of Nobel laureate holding our beer labelled, you know, Brian Schmidt's
pale ale. Oh, that's fantastic,
ale.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So you've done a Brian Schmidt pale ale. Any thought on doing maybe like an aggressive, overbearing, unpalatable ale, the Tony Abbott pale ale.
We don't set out to make unpalatable beers very often, but we have made a few, so we could rename one. Who knows?
You could do an icebox stout, which instead of calling it Sink the Bismarck, you could do Sink the Boats.
Sink the Boats.
Oh, no. Terrible.
A producer had one more. You could do a clone of Hop Thief called Budgie Smuggling Thief, if you want to do that one. So that's...
So we actually...
Those are all thanks to Lee.
I'm not kidding. We actually did do a clone of Hop Thief, the original Hop Thief back in the day. We called it the Hop Thief Thief. And then we did another version of that, so we called it the Hop Thief Thief Thief.
And we stopped there.
And we stopped there, yeah.
Mercifully.
So this next beer we're drinking is a beer to show that we don't just do beers with weird additions and so forth. This is our Nut Brown Ale, done to be...
Yeah, I was wondering what the weird twist was, and there's no weird twist. It's just a Nut Brown Ale, which is really, really nice.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I do have to say, though, that we haven't had a pale-looking beer from...
No, they've all
yet.
they've been a similar colour.
Yeah. So I have to say, I was actually going through the beers that I had that I could bring along, and I was looking at them, and we haven't done a pale beer for a while. And because you know, we don't drink it, you know, frequently enough, we don't brew it often enough, pale beers tend to go downhill a lot faster than dark beers or malty beers or certainly heavier beers. So all of the lighter beers I had, so I had a witty Taipan, but it's got Kaffir Lime in it. Kaffir Lime's just sort of taken over that beer because some of the other flavours have dropped out. Okay. We had a lovely, we really enjoyed it, a Belgian IPA called, do you want to say the French?
As Assassin de Fauteuil Roulant. Roulant, which was, it's a reference to the David Foster Wallace novel Infinite Jest.
Okay.
They're a band of wheelchair
Quebecois
separatist terrorists.
And so we called it that because it was inspired by a beer that Sam had when he was in
Montreal
Quebec
last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was,
But it's gone too now. Well, that was the IPA, so the hops were very important, and it was brewed about 6 months ago, and the hops have just gone.
Yeah, I mean, I've last couple of batches that I brewed have been dark, just because I know I'm not going to drink it all straight away.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's why. So, the one I brewed yesterday was, it was a dark beer, because I figure it's, at least from my experience of drinking beer, it's a lot easier to hide faults in a dark beer than it is in a pale, right? Is that?
Yeah, that's probably true. Certainly, it's easier to hide them in a flavoursome beer, like a heavily hopped beer or a very malty beer or something, than, like, it is the peak of the craft to a certain extent to be able to brew a bland, flavourless lager.
That doesn't have faults.
That's right.
That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because there's just nothing to hide, you know, in something like VB or Crown Lager even, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is very, very tightly controlled stuff. Yeah. Doesn't mean I want to drink it.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it tastes good.
You have to appreciate the
I agree with that.
Process
with that.
That they have in place to keep it, you know, so consistent.
And it's just, it makes it all the better when something out of those guys comes out that's not perfect, like the Crown Ambassador a few years ago,
which was actually I actually liked it,
which was probably better than the other Crown Ambassadors, but that's, you know.
So this Nut Brown Ale, what's the name of this one?
This one's called the Fuzzy Tingle Time, which is a line from the Mighty Boosh. It's a line that the Crack Fox says when he accidentally puts on some fox porn and talks about that was the film for the night times for the Fuzzy Tingle Time. Fuzzy Tingle Time. Sorry, I'm not going to try and do a Crack Fox impersonation.
Yeah, I can't confess to knowing that at all. Sorry.
You don't need to watch that episode.
Yeah, that is the most fucked up episode of Mighty Boosh, and that's up against some stiff competition. So my wife actually came up with that name. She was just throwing down terrible names, and she said that, and we just pissed ourselves laughing. Fantastic, right. That's the name for this beer.
Done.
Yep.
She's actually named a few of our things, at least.
Yeah.
Isn't she? She's named Old Boily.
Oh, yeah.
So which is the brew kettle that we use.
Our big brew kettle was called Old Boily, and the small kettle was called Wee Boily.
Mm.
Which is...
I think Rich probably named that
Rich
one.
Rich named that our Scottish brew guy.
Wee Boily.
Wee Boily.
You don't boil wee in it.
Yeah.
No, not yet. That's a frontier that we are yet to cross.
Okay. When you said not yet, I was like, oh... Okay, is that a plan you've got to do?
Are you doing, like, a collaboration with Todd Carney?
That reference is probably going to be 2 weeks old.
Yeah, that's right.
So our producers asked an interesting question. How do your wives react to the beer? Like, do they like the stuff you brew? Is that...
I don't think either of our wives drink beer. I know my wife doesn't drink at all, you know.
Okay.
She... just isn't interested. She also, sadly, has no sense of smell either. So she can't... I like, go, oh, this beer's great. Have a taste. Oh, no, I have a smell at least. Oh, no, wait, that doesn't work either. So she can look at the beer and, you know, she can hear me talk about the beer, but she,
okay.
You know, she doesn't experience the beer at all.
Mm. Has a nice colour.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
And, yeah, and my wife also doesn't really drink beer. I mean, she'll have a taste of what I'm drinking, but... mostly she likes to complain about the fact that I have boxes and boxes of homebrew that basically sit in our bathtub. And so any time we have a house guest, I have to move it out onto the balcony.
Yeah.
But it's also a good excuse to have people round for parties because they just go through our homebrew.
Oh, and that's it, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I mean...
Because I always have more than I can drink. So.
I think I give most of my homebrew away. Mm. And everyone seems to like my homebrew more than I do as well. So I take satisfaction.
Isn't that the general rule?
Yeah, exactly. I take satisfaction in the fact that people like the beer more than I do.
I'm way too much of a hoarder. I'm like convinced that I need to keep this beer because maybe I'll want a bottle of this and I'll never brew it exactly the same way again.
Well, you know what? I've still kept our bottles of our infected cherry stout in the hopes
good.
That someday we can blend it with something and make an amazing sour beer, but I don't think that's going to happen. So.
Well, that's what 2 Meter Tool does, like.
Right.
Like, they just intentionally infect stuff. And
I heard a story...
That is a cherry beer.
Yeah, I've heard this like second-hand or third-hand now that he had a beer that... in a barrel, perhaps, that had got infected, and it wasn't tasting good. He's like, oh, I'll just leave it there, and he just left it and left it and left it. And he came back to it a year later, he tasted it, he's like, wow, this is tasting amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the sort of weird things that come from spontaneous fermentation, I guess.
And I think, like, I don't think he's always been like that. He started off just brewing straight beers, and then his beer started getting infected, and he tried to get rid of it, and then eventually he started embracing
he's
it.
He's like, yeah, well, this is me now.
And now, like,
I think Australia needs a few brewers who do embrace it, though.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
We're at that point where there's enough brewers doing the straight stuff.
Yep.
Let's have some brewers embracing the weird stuff.
Yeah.
That's...
Like, Ferrell's meant to be starting up
their sour...
Their barrel program.
Anytime
now. It's meant to be this week? Is that...
Well, the thing is, though, like, as soon as they start, you still have to wait, like, 2 or 3 years until any of the good stuff start coming
to New South Wales, especially.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like...
That's
all
right.
I think
as soon as they've started pumping out the beers, all of the people in this room will be making a trip to Perth to check it out.
And I think it's the same story with Bent Spoke in Canberra, and I visited them lately, and they haven't started their barrel program yet, but
they just started like two weeks ago.
The
actual project, I guess.
So they haven't really had time to do anything, but yeah, they intend to start very soon, but I don't expect to see anything for at least another year and a half,
two years. But that's the thing about barrel project especially, right? Like, you don't want to... Like, if I start a barrel project today, I'm not going to give you anything tomorrow, you know?
Mm.
Otherwise, what's the point of the barrel?
Indeed.
So, speaking
of which, have you guys started any barrel beers?
So, no, we don't have a barrel, and we certainly don't have place in my apartment to put a barrel. But you can fake the same effect by using oak chips, and we do that in a couple of these beers. In fact, this one uses oak chips in a sort of weird way as well.
So this, I get a bit of... Again, I'm probably going to be completely wrong again. So let's...
You're getting bacon.
Strike.
You're getting native mint. I'm not getting bacon this time.
Native mint.
I'm getting
definitely
bacon.
Native mint on this one, right?
bit of peat or smoke, at least.
Yeah.
Is that... Okay.
So this is our
God.
Bacon and pepper.
So this is... Okay, fucking hell.
So this was brewed mostly with Rauchmalt, which is... German,
all right, so I'm
German
not that far
malt.
Off. There we go.
And oh it was God, designed good. To be kind of as smoky as possible. Some of the Rauch smoke has dropped out a little bit, but as well as that, we made what's called baconated bourbon, which is basically bourbon infused with bacon fat.
Yep.
And we often... oak beers on oak that we've soaked in bourbon, so we're like, well, let's make some baconated bourbon and soak the oak chips in that, and then we'll put that into the beer as well. So this is the beer that took, this is only for a 25 litre batch, 500 grams of bacon that we fried up, drained off the fat. You infuse the fat into bourbon, we shake it around every, you know, yep. Whenever you think about it, every few hours, you leave it for about 48 hours or so forth, and you freeze it. There's actually a really good tutorial on how to make baconated bourbon. It's actually really, really delicious. Just
if you send
itself.
Us a link to that, we'll put it in the show notes.
Fantastic. I'll
right,
do
let's
that.
Do that. I don't want to do that. That's,
It is so fantastic. I learned about this whole process from a friend of mine at work who's mad keen into cocktails. He is,
yeah.
like, he is to cocktails what I am to beer at our workplace.
Okay, yeah.
And he... made these amazing cocktails with baconated bourbon, and it was just wonderful. And we were like, we can do some beer with that. So,
yeah.
So that was that. And we soaked the oak chips, put that into the beer as well. And then we added just a small amount of black pepper as well. We needed it felt the fattiness of the bacon made it feel a bit sort of heavy and stuff. We needed something sharper
to kind of cut
balance
through that,
it
yeah.
and everything. So that's where the pepper came from.
Mm. This was one of the most genius things Jez did in the brewery, I think, because this beer was tasting really quite poor.
It was
before
it was,
he added the pepper.
Yeah,
and then
it really
heavy brought it to
and,
life
and flabby and stuff like that.
You know what I'm getting?
So is that
this?
The name of this? What is that?
So the name of this one is. So this is part of a series of
requires
beers.
Requires some explanation.
Part of a series
that's
of beer.
A good sign, I think.
Every beer we've done that's been smoke based, we've started with.
We should say that the first all grain beer we did was a peat smoked Japanese
oak aged Japanese IPA.
IPA.
Yeah. That was the first all-grain beer we did.
As you do.
Because we're like, well, if we can suddenly get access to all of these other new cool ingredients, we're going to use them
everything. Don't do like a test batch or anything, like it's just a straight IPA. Just go straight for the smoked whatever, you know.
So that one, so the name for that beer came from one of these long email threads that we were pinging back and forth. And for some reason, I was just typing smoke, something like that, and I was thinking it looked like the word looked like s'mores, like the campfire thing, and so I went to type s apostrophe moke like that, only I mistyped it and typed smole m-o-l-e and for some reason I found that hilarious, and I sent it to these guys and they found it hilarious too, because we all share the same weird sense of humor for some reason, so the name just stuck, and so we called
the idea. He was so excited about a peat smoked beer that he couldn't type properly, I think.
so that was called the smole, and so from then on we've had the sporran, which was a
peat smoked
wee heavy
scotch ale,
so it was s apostrophe porran. And this was the third one we did, and so this one's called the Sauce, s apostrophe horse. I don't know.
Yeah.
Going
for sort of
smoky barbecue, pepper, that sort of thing. So that's where that comes from.
Nice. Yeah, I'm getting and I mean this in the best possible way. I'm getting bacon shapes. From
Great tasting note, that one.
What's like the 961?
Yes.
Spiced ale, the Lebanese.
So
ale
I was getting
pizza shapes.
We've talked about it on this podcast. I think that was our first episode. We said that.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that was,
it was over a year ago. Yeah, we were talking about that exact beer and saying pizza shapes. So We just need another. We need the what the they have the cheese and bacon
barbecue shapes.
Chicken. That's crickets. What we need. Yeah. And the chicken. Yeah.
Chicken. Oh yeah, chicken shapes. Yeah.
Okay, so if we can get a beer for each of them, then we can do a.
So if you guys can like,
then we can do a shape
chicken and some beer.
Or we could have the Bacchus cocktail.
Yeah, Bacchus cocktail.
That's
yeah.
right.
I mean, to be fair, the chicken. Chicken shapes are what they're just pretty much just MSG.
Yeah. MSG and chicken salt, I think. Yeah.
Well, chicken salt. Do a beer just with MSG and chicken. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. So an MSG ale is that? Can you? Is that,
well, no. I mean,
people
have
done umami.
Umami. Yeah, umami. Umami's been done. Yeah. So,
I don't think anyone's used chicken salt for it though.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, chicken salt ghosts.
Yes. We okay. might edit that out. So you've got that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Copyright, Adrian Poor.
we probably should start wrapping it up soon. Or I mean, you guys are welcome to keep going on. I've got a head.
Damn, because we had two more beers left.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can keep going. We're almost at an hour anyway, so
yep.
We might wrap it up. So, thanks for bringing beers, of course. Which were all delicious. I haven't had any beers before, I think.
Oh, right.
So this is...
Oh, you missed out on the mid-strength. That's our flagship beer. So sorry about that.
All right. If we stop recording now, could we have it? Could
let's have it now. Let's edit this and we'll have the mid-strength.
All right, let's do that. Because I have heard good things and I don't want to leave without trying that. But thank you very much for coming and being a part of this podcast.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
As always, I'm Tom. I'm on Twitter at A Study in Beer. You can probably also find me at the pub.
at the pub.
It doesn't matter which pub. You could probably.
I'm going to follow that around.
and you're on Twitter.
I'm at Adrian Poor.
And you guys are both on Twitter as well.
I'm Jez Fletcher.
And
I'm Leitu Gonflabler.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Link that in the show notes.
Got a lot of links in the show notes, Lee. That's
enter in Google Translate inflatable lettuce French. You'll come up with it.
Okay,
of course. Of course.
And Jabberwock beer. It's also on Twitter. Jabberwock Brew.
There we go. Excellent. Well, we'll see you in 2 weeks, I guess. For the next episode. Hopefully, if we can get something organised.